You're listening to the John C. Scott Political Forum. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Welcome to our show. It's August 16th. I don't want to mix any words with you. I don't support Raheena Romero for mayor. I think she's a nice person, an honest person, a great mother, and a great wife, and a great, I don't know, citizen. But she's going to be a terrible mayor. I mean, terrible, beyond your worst nightmare, in my opinion. And outside sources of money have apparently pumped in $750,000 into her campaign. And she could top out at $1 million. She's a clean election candidate. How do you do that? What do people think of all this outside money in a mayor's race beyond anything we've ever seen before? Let's talk with Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party. Third-party money in this race at an alarming number, Don Jorgensen.
Well, first of all, John, I have to ask you to stop waffling.
I mean, sorry. Really. Sorry about that. Yeah. How do you really feel? I don't know. I have no idea. Yeah.
You know, my view of this, first I've got to come back to one of my favorite old-time politicians, and that was Tip O'Neill, the Speaker of the House from Massachusetts, who was the first person I ever heard observe that all politics is local. And that's what we have here. Even though it's a Democratic Party, you've got one of the most intense local races with, I think, more knives out than we've seen in quite a while in this mayor's race. And one of those new knives is just this incredible influx, over half a million, maybe up to a million, of outside money, which we've never seen before. I think it's coming from really a result of a confluence of events. Number one, you have Democrats who have been activated by Donald Trump. I mean, everything goes back to him, it seems, good and bad. Good for the Democrats, bad for the country. But it's gotten Democrats activated and looking at even local races. That's what we have here. Then what Raheena Romero is benefiting from is a lot of support from women's groups who have money and are putting money into her campaign specifically, which is interesting, not splitting it among her and Randy Dorman, but right to her. You have Hispanic groups who have created PACs or have had political action committees who are pouring money in like never before. And a lot of it is from out of state, which brings up another question. So I think those three factors are playing a role in bringing in this amount of money that we haven't seen before. And I think it's also creating some real questions for the future because, again, in the past, traditionally, groups that have supported Democrats didn't play favorites in the primaries unless there was a clear progressive versus a clear moderate, and it was kind of equalized. But now you have groups taking sides that I think could pose some problems for them down the road. And I'm thinking particularly of, and you haven't mentioned this, of Planned Parenthood. Planned Parenthood Advocates of Arizona has endorsed and given money to Raheena Romero. Well, I don't know Randy Dorman's background, but I know that Steve Farley, for example, has been a staunch supporter of women's rights and of Planned Parenthood and choice all his life. And it's interesting for them to focus in on a primary in this way. I think it will hurt them when it comes to their public perception and their revenues and donations, too, as a result. So I think there are a lot of perhaps unintended or unexpected consequences of this race as well.
Well, it seems to me that, Steve Farley has a good argument. He said, look, as far as women groups, Arizona's List, which supports women for public office, I supported women's reproductive rights. I supported everything they support. I've supported all the labor unions time after time after endless time. I've walked with them, fought with them, and fought for them. Over 12 years in my time in the legislature, when I was in the minority, it was much more difficult to get anything done for them, but I was there for them. They're not there for me. They're there funding my opponent. Why should I have ever given them my vote? Other than the fact I thought it was the right thing to do, which is what Farley has said. But boy, you got to ask yourself, the next time a labor guy comes by and says, we'd like to help you, you want to, yeah, right. Sure. I can count on you, right? I think he has a real argument of saying, why they are not loyal to me when I was loyal to them? I don't get it. It seems bizarre.
Well, I think what we have here, one of the differences is Steve Farley's a pretty experienced public servant and elected official, and he knows that game. I'm sure it's happened to him more than once when he was in the legislature, both as a member of the House and a member of the state Senate, that groups like that who perhaps supported an opponent then came to him looking for help. Yeah, he knows how the game is played, and I don't think this will bother him too much because he understands that. And I think you made the point, perhaps, that he said he's focused on doing the right thing. He's demonstrated that, I think, in a very strong, positive campaign. That's one of the negative consequences of this kind of ending to this campaign. It started out very positive on all sides. I think you'd agree. They had great debates, a lot of good information out there, a lot of exposure in the community for all three of the primary candidates. And it's a shame it's come down to these attacks and these attack ads and these attack mailers that contain, frankly, a lot of falsehoods. And this last one that just came out attacking Steve Farley from a PAC supporting Raheena Romero is just the worst of the worst, with a lot of misleading attacks. And it's a shame that Romero herself hasn't condemned it, but has allowed it to sit out there, attacking Steve Farley, claiming that he opposed a minimum wage bill, which, as you know, was a bill proposed and supported by all Republicans and opposed not just by Steve Farley, but by every Democrat, because it would have frozen the minimum wage, I think it's $7.65, forever. It was a bad bill, and yet this attack ad supporting Romero is supposedly they're twisting that to attack Farley, who was on the right side of the issue, as he was on the right side of the education issues, too. He's been attacked for in a misleading way. So it's a shame to see the campaign of Raheena Romero, after doing such a good job campaigning for several months, sink to this level in the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's a shame as well. I've interviewed Steve Farley for the last 12 years. I've interviewed Raheena not as often. She just hasn't been as accessible as Steve Farley has been. I think Raheena is a very nice person. I really do. I think she's probably her heart's in the right place. I just do not think she's as well qualified to be mayor of Tucson, Arizona, as Steve Farley. I think we'd be much better off with Steve Farley as mayor. And that's why I support him. But the idea that you would go outside of the state of Arizona, outside of your community, and literally raise $750,000 and then trash your opponent at the very end of the campaign, I think is despicable. You can say, well, she didn't have anything to do with that, and I don't believe that. I think she's as coordinated with a third-party effort as anybody could be. Her husband works for Raul Grijalva. Raul Grijalva is a congressperson for the last 20 years and has a machine, a political machine that has been active from the moment he served on the TUSD school board to the moment he served as a board of supervisor to the time he went to Congress. This is a Grijalva machine. And it has been very effective for Raul Grijalva. It's been effective in electing other people that Raul Grijalva has helped. And this is a tie. This is a connection with Raheena's husband as the chief of staff for Raul Grijalva that cannot be ignored. You just can't ignore that. And the idea that her former staff member is now running one of the PACs that helped her is even more evidence that these are connected. And I think that's really too bad for this community. I think it's too bad for the whole system, in my opinion.
Well, I think folks that have been involved with party politics in Tucson for a long time understand that there are those alliances and factions that run very deep, those supporting Grijalva and the folks around him and those who oppose him. It's not a racial issue. It's a community issue because it crosses over all types of folks. And so, again, you always see that within a party, different factions opposing each other within the party. And this is another example of that. I think you're probably absolutely correct. We've seen some of the folks on the opposite side of where Grijalva's folks have been involved with a different PAC, which is also kind of a strange situation there. But I think it comes back to the desperation of a campaign who's behind in the last few weeks. All the polls that came out in the past month seem to favor Steve Farley very strongly, almost 2-1 compared to Raheena Romero. And now that we have the voting already started. Already 20% of the registered voters have voted, which is even higher than the last election at this time. So the turnout's pretty impressive, and I think it speaks to the Democrats flexing their muscles and perhaps his activism, again, that we hope continues. But the point is there's a shrinking number of undecided voters that are out there, and I think that's why you see these attack ads. The interesting question is whether they do any good, because most of the research has indicated that they don't sway any voters toward one person or another. They sway voters toward not voting and just saying, you know, a pox on both their houses and I'll stay home. But in a race like this, I don't think that will be effective. So this may be a lot of money that goes into a lot of pockets of folks that print out mailers and ads, but it may not swing the election much at all.
You know, and you and I have had this conversation over and over again, and you've heard me say that I believe that this city council and this mayor has enjoyed literally a referendum of favorable people toward this council on many different levels. The council said, voters, would you give us more money for streets? They did. And then the council said, would you give us more money for parks? And people did. That's a statement, really, from a city government asking for more money from your constituents and those people saying yes to your request to improve your streets and improve your parks. I think the city manager, Mike Ortega, is one of the best city managers we've ever had. Probably as good as you go back to Joel Valdez, and that's going back a ways, but you go to a real giant when you go back to Valdez as city manager. And I remember those days when he was city manager, and probably one of the few people still alive that remembers that. But the simple truth is that, you know, this council has enjoyed, I think, support because it has acted responsibly to the city of Tucson and its needs. We're going to have new council people in Ward number 4. Shirley Scott's gone. We're going to have new council people in Ward 1 because Raheem is running for mayor. We have, obviously, a new mayor coming. 3 of the 7 that govern this city are going to be new now and different. And I hate to see this city council move in a different direction from where we have gone with Jonathan Rothschild as the current mayor. If we go another direction, we're going to find it's not going to work very well. And it just seems to me, I don't want to go back to that time. I think that, you know, we can solve our problems with the people that we had, but can we solve them with the people we're going to get? And that worries me a great deal.
We've had a very pragmatic, very successful, and as I've said, a no-drama mayor in Jonathan Rothschild. He's got things done without creating divisiveness, but able to work with the business community, with the education community, with the unions. He's done a tremendous job working with the state legislature. And now in transitioning, as you pointed out, every successful mayor has had that same kind of mold. The challenge for whoever's next is who can best govern in the same way and, as you pointed out, work with a brand new and perhaps even more diverse city council than previous. You know, Raheena Romero's been part of that past council and certainly deserves credit for what the whole council has done, but hasn't been tested in a way that Steve Farley has been tested in having to work with a diverse body like he has in the Senate and in the House of Representatives up in Phoenix, having to bring people together and build coalitions and work in a very kind of low-key, pragmatic way to get things done, whether you look at what happened with the streetcar down in Tucson or getting the education funding, that kind of bombast and yelling and screaming wouldn't have worked there. You've seen that would not have worked with the mayor's office here, and you need that kind of calm leadership. Steve Farley has seemed to stay on that kind of even keel, if you will. You had a previous guest who reflects that as well today in Randy Freese, who's another excellent representative from Tucson. But I think that style has served the city well, and I think is critical to have someone that is able to come in and reflect the style of Jonathan Rothschild and that kind of pragmatic decision-making and coalition building in the future. I don't think Raheena Romero has done herself much good in that area with these recent attack ads, and that's another challenge that if she were to win, even though she's still trailing in the polls, she'd have to overcome. I'm not sure that would be possible.
Don Jorgensen, thanks for being on our show. Thanks for your observations. Thanks for staying involved in our town as the former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Good to talk with you, Don, really. Absolutely great to talk with you. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, John.
Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Pima County Democratic Party. Coming up next, Moe Goldman, one of the best immigration lawyers in America. We'll talk about the border. Then we'll come back with another former chair of the Democratic Party, Jeff Rogers, about the madness that is the mayor's race in Tucson in these last few days of the campaign for the Democratic nomination for mayor. So stay with us. This is KVOI. This is The Voice, trusted local news and talk. This is the John C. Scott Political Talk Show, brought to you by Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly. You know, I enjoy doing this talk show. I enjoy listening to this talk show. I enjoy being a part of it. I mean, I've done this thing for a long, long time, 31 years, and I always learn from people. I've always tried to include on our interview list a group of people who know just a hell of a lot more about what they're talking about and what I'm talking about than I do. Mo Goldman's one of those people. He's one of the best immigration lawyers in all of America. He fights a fight every single day that seems to be so uphill that it would absolutely, I think, destroy almost anybody that didn't have the kind of constitution that Mo Goldman has. Thank God for that. And by the way, the Trump administration has announced it's moving forward with one of its most aggressive steps yet to restrict illegal immigration, denying green cards to many migrants who use Medicaid, food stamps, housing vouchers, and other forms of public assistance. How does that affect what's happening at the border? Let's talk with Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer, and one of the best in the country. Mo, this just changes every single day, but these people obviously, so much for giving you tired and you're poor and whatever, you know? Forget
yes,
that.
We know that the poem is now, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their 2 feet and will not become a public charge.
There you go.
And so with those words, Ken Cuccinelli, who's the acting director of USCIS, basically changed the entire welcome to the United States to make it unwelcome, which, you know, goes in line with everything else that's been happening. But, you know, the way it would impact immigration from a legal perspective would be just devastating. We're already seeing a lot more scrutiny on individuals who are applying for green cards or for visas or for any other type of immigration benefit. And this would really limit the number of individuals who can legally immigrate to the U.S. because it will give an immigration officer the ability to consider an applicant's use of public assistance or the likelihood that they might become a public charge or could become a public charge and use that against them. So, you know, in a process that is already discretionary in nature, it really opens the door to much more discretion and the ability to deny people based off of their economic status, more so than we've ever seen before. And of course, that's going to hit a lot of different, you know, minority groups, especially the Hispanic and Latinos, and people who come from Africa and from all over the world. But, you know, it's going to be a big issue if it actually, you know, becomes a rule and becomes enacted. There's already been lawsuits filed by numerous organizations. I think the state of California filed a lawsuit, and so there's going to be most likely an injunction put in place initially to halt the forward progress of this rule, and then we're just going to have to see what happens from that point forward. But just like everything else that's been happening with this administration, it's winding up in court and most likely headed towards the Supreme Court.
We're talking with Mo Goldman, who is an immigration lawyer. By the way, Governor Doug Ducey of Arizona has criticized the new Trump administration policy that seeks to deny green cards to those at the bottom of the economic ladder. Mm-hmm. He says, I'm someone who thinks this, it needs a balanced approach. Probably that balanced approach would be, I need somebody to clean my toilet that doesn't have a condo in Coronado.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because if you look back at, you know, Doug Ducey's history, and I did a lot of research on this a couple of years ago regarding his business, and he ran, the founder, one of the founders of Cold Stone Creamery, and when you look at dairy farms, the mass majority of their workers that work on those farms under just harsh conditions are undocumented immigrants. The statistics don't lie on that, that majority of them are undocumented or people who come from other countries and immigrate here and have some sort of legal status. But again, starting from the bottom and trying to work their way up or trying to, you know, find a better life for them and their families, because Americans aren't going to be doing those jobs, you know, walking around in cow dung most of the day. So I think when Doug Ducey looks at it, you know, I think he also sees it from the perspective of we need, you know, people from all types of economic background to come to the United States. And we need people who are going to, you know, fight hard and maybe work two jobs or three jobs just to make ends meet so that they can send their kid to college, you know, like we've seen many do and achieve success and drive that in, you know, that instill that type of mentality into their children. And I had an example of that this week. I had a man come to see me who's currently facing removal from the U.S. And he was telling me, he said he's facing deportation. He works two jobs. He's a mechanic and, you know, he's the sole supporter for his children, his two children. And, you know, his goal in life is to, you know, make enough money so that it can help them go to college and maybe become professionals and not have to work in, you know, the labor world. And there's nothing wrong with doing that, but that's what a lot of people want. They want to see their children achieve, you know, more success. And so, you know, if we're just going to be welcoming a bunch of people who don't, you know, have that drive, you know, just because they're not at that same level, then as far as economics, then, you know, we're going to be doing this country a disservice. And, you know, the fact that some people need to be picked up by the bootstraps or be helped out, you know, because of, you know, their economic status and maybe have to, you know, get food stamps or some other form of, you know, public benefits, you know, we should not be using that against them in this evaluation.
By the way, the United States government has sent about 900, mostly Central American and Cuban migrants, back to northern Mexico border cities since expanding this controversial Remain in Mexico program to the easternmost point of the shared border 2 weeks ago. There are among about 3,000 people with pending U.S. immigration proceedings who've been sent back to wait in Mexico. You know, this has got to be a nightmare for you. I know you probably don't have a lot of people you have to go visit on the other side of the border, but other people that do. But we'll never clear this up. Well, how are you going to get through 3,000 if you can't even talk to them? You don't even know where the hell they are, and you'd have to go to Mexico to find them.
Yeah, and from what I've heard anecdotally, a lot of those individuals are very, very frustrated right now, and rightfully so. And they're stranded. They're stuck. They really have no choice or option right now but to just sit and wait in Mexico. And they're in limbo. Their lives are in limbo. And, you know, they would prefer to be, even in an odd way, sitting in the U.S. in a detention center where their case is at least moving forward and they know the status of those case of their case versus sitting in another, you know, third country with no idea of where their case stands. You know, obviously, some people may not want to be sitting in a detention facility, but I think many migrants who are coming to the U.S. understand that that might be part of the process of trying to get through and eventually having your day in court. But yeah, this Remain in Mexico, the migrant MPP, I forget what the full acronym stands for, protections rule, is, you know, it's a mess. It's a disaster. And, you know, unfortunately, you have people who, ironically, if you were Cuban and you came to the border before the Trump administration, you could, you know, be able to enter and then apply for permanent residency. But that, you know, we don't have that rule anymore. So we don't have the Cuban adjustment provision.
Well, it just seems to me, you know, this is just getting worse. I mean, it's just getting worse time and time again. It's getting worse.
Well, I don't know if you saw the story today. It was on the fake news website, CNN.com. And there was a story on there about U.S. citizens who fear deportation and carry their passports. One of the people who's mentioned in that story is my legal assistant, and she talks about in that story how she's insecure and uncomfortable because she does have an accent. She did naturalize and become a naturalized U.S. citizen, but she is afraid that if she doesn't have her passport and she gets pulled over and Customs and Border Protection shows up, or maybe, you know, she gets turned over to CBP or ICE, she could be held just like we've seen in other cases around the country where ICE has held U.S. citizens or people who have permanent residency for no reason, but they just didn't have their documents on them. So, you know, it seems like the intended purpose of striking fear into the minds of individuals, even ones that are U.S. citizens, is working. And that, you know, again, is unfortunate and not what I believe, you know, this country stands for.
Well, Mo, the reason I have such a high regard for you is you've pointed out to me over and over again, and you've been able to convince me over and over again. These are people that are human beings. These are people that want a better life. We're not talking about just a bunch of names, not talking about just a number of hundreds of people that are seeking asylum and have to be returned to Mexico. These are human beings like you and me who want the same thing out of life, a better life for their family. They want to have some kind of opportunity that they didn't have in their own countries, which obviously wasn't much of an opportunity if you really thought your life was in danger in Guatemala, Honduras, or El Salvador. And you remind me of that every time. But somehow or another, this administration forgets that these are human beings who love their children and do not want their children taken away from them.
I think the administration knows that, and they're just, you know, playing ignorant. They know that these are humans, but they don't view them that way. They view them as, you know, just a blight on society, and that's, you know, it's a shame. That's where we really are, you know, at right now.
Do you have a guess, Mo Goldman, of how many illegal immigrants or illegal immigrants we could absorb in this country without being overrun or invaded? I mean, there's a lot of jobs and a big country.
Yeah. And the jobs are going to continue to open up if we have... I mean, I don't know the number. I'll have to see if I can get that data for you for next week. But I can tell you that the number of job openings are going to rapidly increase if we lose temporary protected status for Salvadorans and Hondurans, which is currently one of the provisions that's on the chopping block. There's a court case pending, but it looks like it's quite possible that the court's going to find that this administration can end TPS. And if they do, that would open up upwards of about 200,000 jobs for Americans. Most of them are in, again, like agriculture, construction, service industry, restaurants, hospitality, and it's going to have a ripple effect, across many businesses around the country. I've spoken to business owners, especially out in New York, where there's a lot of Hondurans and Salvadorans with TPS. And they say that if TPS ends, it will devastate their businesses. They'll not be able to continue to function. And I've heard that from different industries across the board. So it's there's a huge risk out there for this to have just a devastating economic impact. And, I think if that happens, that's when you're going to start to see a real turn from a lot of people who may have supported this president or this administration. I think at that point, you're going to see people starting to realize that they've made a mistake, that this has been really a bad error, a judgment on their part to have supported these policies, because these individuals, most of them in TPS, have been here for two decades, and they have had work permission, and they own homes, and they have families that live here with them. Many of them are mixed with children who are U.S. citizens, and they work for businesses that depend on them. And many businesses may have more than half of their employees with TPS. And what you're going to see is these individuals, if TPS gets phased out, will not be able to continue to work legally. The businesses that are signed up for E-Verify, of course, are going to have to let them go, and other businesses, if they want to keep them on, would have to be paying them under the table, which obviously is not legal, and people won't be able to pay their bills or mortgages. It's just going to be awful. So, be ready, because that's the next axe to fall.
Well, you never cease to make me depressed.
Depress you on a Friday afternoon.
Always on a Friday. I'm thinking, hey, it's the weekend.
Yeah,
John, you're going to have a great time. I know, call Bo Goldman, and you'll really feel crappy. Yeah, get a hold of him.
You're the one who asked me to come on today.
That's true. I did it.
Just bring me on a Monday when you're depressed already, because it's the beginning of the week.
I think we'll switch this around. Hey, Mo, thanks for being with us. I sure appreciate it. Thanks for all the work you do. We really appreciate that, too. Thank you so much. Mo Goldman, one of the best immigration lawyers in all of America. He'll be followed by Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party. What about the last-minute money for Raina Romero to become mayor of Tucson by winning the Democratic nomination for mayor? I'm telling you, don't let this happen. Please, I know what I am talking about. Do not let this happen. We'll be back with Jeff Rogers after this. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the John C. Scott Political Forum on this August the 16th. Thanks for being with us. Up next, Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in all of America. Jeff, I've been commenting on the Raina Romero third-party effort of money that has now perhaps even closed in on $1 million for her Democratic nomination for mayor. We've never seen anything like this at all. What do you think the repercussions of this is going to be and are at the moment?
Well, we've never seen anything even close to this. I mean, we've never even seen tens of thousands of dollars, let alone hundreds of thousands of dollars leading up to maybe $1 million being spent by outside groups on a Tucson election. The most expensive mayoral election ever was 8 years ago when Jonathan Rothschild got elected, and I was chair of the Democratic Party at the time, and he raised over $300,000, something that's very close to what Steve Farley has raised this time. And he went didn't use any taxpayer dollars. So, you know, that was probably the most any mayoral candidate had ever raised. And in my 40 years in Tucson, I've never seen outside money come into a mayoral race of any significant amount at all. I mean, even in the tens of thousands of dollars. It just doesn't happen. It's unheard of. This is absolutely, positively obscene. I mean, it is something that is it makes a mockery of the city's clean election system. And, you know, Tom Volge was very proud of creating the clean election system we have of city's matching funds. And early on, because Raheena Romero said she was running so-called clean, which I now laugh out loud every time I hear that, he supported her. I don't know if he still supports her now that he sees how she's perverted the system. But you've got to realize that we all know how this is done. I mean, when Raheena ran 8 years ago and I was chair of the party, we mistakenly believed that she had a viable opponent in a primary. And we believed that he was put up by mostly Republicans. And we set up an independent committee to help her out. And, you know, we all wink and nod and know exactly what we're doing. This is not rocket science here. I mean, we all know what these independent committees do. And, you know, she knew what I was going to do when we set up that independent committee. And it was to support her. And I've supported her in every election. And I think she's been a good councilwoman. I don't think she's the right candidate for mayor this time. I support Steve Farley and have donated to his campaign. And I'd be out there walking the streets if I didn't have a torn medial collateral ligament. And I hope to be walking by maybe next week. But, you know, I'm extremely offended by what's going on in this election. And, you know, and it's not even the least bit transparent. I mean, I love Laura Dent dearly. She's you know, smart and sweet, and I think the world of her. She was Raheena's chief of staff for 7 years, 7.5 years, I think. And, you know, it's hardly transparent when she leaves her job. And you got to realize people plan this stuff all ahead. It's kind of like, you know, we're all on the same page here, and you can coordinate all you want between the independent group before it is filed, before it raises money. And so I'm sure they had plenty of conversations about what the strategy was, and then maybe they've complied with the law and have not coordinated. They filed the committee paperwork since they started raising funds. I suspect they haven't done that because it's against the law, and nobody wants to get in trouble for things like that. But the fact is you know, they're all on the same page. And, I mean, we know how this is done. Because we do it all the time. So, you know, it's very unfortunate because, you know, it's going to be very hard to unify this party again and for the general election, and particularly get us all back on the same page for 2020 when it really, really, really matters, and we really need to turn out Southern Arizona to take this state back and to maybe take it back for a Democratic presidential candidate.
I would love to find somebody behind the curtain putting this all together, and I would suggest, okay, the most likely culprit there would be Raul Grijalva, the longtime congressman who employs Raheena Romero's husband and has, I think, pieces of his political machinery and local political position all over this community, which has served him well. But I can't say that. But I can suggest, I would imagine this to be true, that he's one of the movers and shakers behind this effort of getting these outside interests, which are labor unions and stuff outside of the state, that have a tremendous amount of money and have thrown a tremendous amount of money into this race, that they are, in fact, part of an effort that he has been behind. But I don't know that. Do you know that?
Well, let's put it this way. You know, it's probably the only thing that Bruce Ash and I agree on is that, you know, of course his supporters are behind this. Is he personally pulling the strings? You know, he's a busy congressman. He probably doesn't have time to personally be involved, but certainly his supporters and surrogates are behind this effort. You got to know that. I mean, you don't have to be a genius to know that, but, you know, and he's been a divisive force in the Democratic Party at various times. I mean, he runs his own game from the South Side. And when I was chair, I had I was fortunate, and I had Adam Kinzie who's doing Raheena's work now as my executive director, and we were able to pull Raul unit of the party and the non-Raul unit of the party together to be pretty unified. And that was not easy to do. Because he runs his own thing. But for the benefit of the entire party in Southern Arizona, we needed to do that. And it's a very difficult thing to do because he has his own ideas of what he wants to do and the organization he wants to run. And sometimes that's antithetical to what's good for the party as a whole for electing all Democrats, not just Raul Grijalva.
Well, you take a look at this, and I mean, the only way I can make a judgment in this case is from the many interviews I've had with both of these individuals. And I'm talking about Raheena Romero, probably 30 over a period of time, and got to know her fairly well, followed a lot of her votes, followed almost a schizophrenic approach to some of the major decisions she had to make, changing her mind almost on a daily basis. And for it, I'm against it. I'm for it. I'm against it. The same thing. But I've talked to Farley, I don't know, maybe 100 times. And I find him a very thought-provoking, intelligent leader who I think would make a great mayor out of the field we have. And the truth of the matter is, if she becomes the mayor of Tucson, I think we've gone backwards rather than forward. And I hate to see that happen because I've said over and over again, this community has enjoyed a relationship with their city council unlike anything I've seen in 50 years, and with their city manager as well.
This has been an extraordinary 8 years for Tucson, and I don't think anybody can step right in and fill Jonathan Rothschild's shoes. They're too big a shoes to fill. But I think the person best qualified to take a shot at it is Steve Farley. He's a steady hand. I think he'll work well with the business community, and he'll uphold the values that we all hold dear as Democrats here in Tucson. So, you know, I think he's by far the best person. And I remember listening a little earlier to my friend Bruce Ash talk to you about this dark money. There is no constitutional right to anonymity. Now, right now, with the Citizens United case, well, you know, people can give about unlimited amounts of money. They can. It's difficult to restrict the money people give or do to support or oppose a candidate, but there's no constitutional right to anonymity. And I really think that the cure for dark money is to expose the donors, because if they want to hide behind a wall of privacy, I think that's a dangerous recipe for democracy. And all we need to do is expose these people and their businesses. And, you know, if they're afraid to let that be known, don't give the money to causes that are controversial.
Well, you have to ask yourself, what do these people get for what they're contributing? So these labor unions and other particular interests donate, well, hundreds of thousands of dollars in this case. You got to donate by that kind of number in order to get to a million. And so what do you get for that? You get
I frankly think they get anything more out of Raheena Romero than they get out of Steve Farley.
Exactly, my point.
Equally as strong a supporter of Planned Parenthood, of unions, of organized labor as she has. I think there's been a lot of pressure brought to bear upon some of these unions, because I've talked to some of the membership, and some of the membership of some of the unions were quite interested in endorsing Steve Farley, not just the public safety unions that did endorse Farley, but others were interested in endorsing him. And it was plainly made to them that, well, there could be consequences if you do that.
Consequences. I think people who take money from these people ought to figure out there could be consequences, too, because you may give them your vote for 12 years. That doesn't mean they're going to give you their vote. So there you go. You know.
Yeah, so I think this is a real interesting test of the Democratic Party. You know, you've got Ward 1 where they've got the hand-picked Grijalva candidate in Santa Cruz, and then you've got the hand-picked mayoral candidate. Can they pick off both of those seats and sort of take control of the city? Or is it a reckoning time where, you know, that's not going to happen and the city's going to continue to move forward on its current trajectory?
Well, I don't know what that figure is. I do know that the latest polling showed Steve Farley up about 17 points, and that's just recent. That's within the last 24 hours. That's the number I hear. I don't know how accurate that number is. it may have changed with all of this money being poured into the race just in the last few days. If that number's correct, can she overcome that with what she's doing, Jeff Rogers?
Well, you know, it's kind of late in the game to be engaging in these negative attacks on Farley. You know, because, I mean, the bulk of ballots went in. I'm sure you, like me and my wife, we sent our ballot in during the first week that we had it. And I think the bulk of the ballots are already in. I would guess that 60 to 70% of the people who are going to vote have already voted. So it's a little late in the game to come in with all this money and attack Steve Farley. So, you know, if he indeed has the lead and had the lead, he may still have it.
Well, we're going to find that out, that's for sure. But I don't think anybody expected this kind of money. I mean, we may hit $1 million.
No.
That's uncharted water.
I'm shocked. I'm utterly and completely shocked at the amount of money that's come in on this. This is just, you know, this is reminiscent of, you know, maybe 10 years ago a congressional campaign would go for this kind of money. But it's just shocking. And I don't know what we do about it. With the current Supreme Court, it's going to be very difficult. But I think the best thing we can do is just shine some daylight on it and expose who the donors are who donate the money that create these groups that have names like, in this case, Chispa, Arizona.
Oh, wow. Jeff Rogers, great to talk with you. I hope you have a great weekend. I appreciate you being on this show so much. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, one of the best defense lawyers in all of America. You know, at Perfection Auto Works, complete auto repair, foreign and domestic, they offer you free air conditioning belt and hose inspection, free radiator cooling system diagnostics, and free fall trip vehicle inspection. You're going to go to the mountains, to go to the Aspen, and you want your car running right, don't you? Well, how well is it running? And how dependable is it? You want to know. Take your car to Perfection Auto Works at 1046 North Beverly, or call Mike Emery at 323-8650. I want you to have a great weekend, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to the John C. Scott Political Talk Show. I want to thank Steve Farley, candidate for mayor, Dr. Randy Freese, state legislator, Brent Davis, former city councilman, Don Jorgensen, former chair of the Democratic Party, Mo Goldman, immigration lawyer, and Jeff Rogers, former chair of the Democratic Party, for being our guest today. Stay tuned next for the best local political talk show in all of Southern Arizona. Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera is a sports talk show unlike any other that you've ever heard. It has a perspective of the past and a prediction of the future. It is a great, great sports show. Steve Rivera's Eye on the Ball next at KVOI, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening.